I'm Leonard Lopate, and you're listening to special coverage of Inauguration Day on WNYC and WNYC.org. Stay with us throughout the afternoon as we talk about the day's events and what we can expect to see ahead. You can give us a call here at 212-433-9692. Tell us what you thought of the speech and perhaps what your hopes are for the next 4 years. You can also leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. And now that the swearing-in and the inaugural address is over and the crowd is beginning to disperse, we're going to WNYC's Andrea Bernstein, who's in Washington, D.C. Hi, Andrea.
Hi, Leonard. How are you?
I'm okay. Where were you situated during the swearing-in and inauguration speech?
I was sitting right in front of the military band, the U.S. Marine Band, which is playing now, which was right in front of the podium. So the podium and where everybody is sitting is above me, but the podium is about 20 feet from where I am. I was sitting for the ceremony.
Were you able to look over the speech before President Obama gave it?
No, we were not given a copy of the speech. I'm not sure if anybody was. I do know we did get a note from the transition press office yesterday saying they were shutting down before this ceremony and that we wouldn't be able to reach them in the White House until later this afternoon, that there would be a sort of information gap or blackout from the White House press team until they get over there, where I understand they're actually going to be headed over now in a van.
Well, we received it in advance, embargoed, and he stuck pretty close to the text. Very few changes. In a couple of cases, he transposed words or dropped a word. But often in these speeches, it's really interesting to see what was included and what was left out. Very little in this case. Have you had time to get any reactions to the speech from any of the public officials nearby?
Well, we are in a press section, which is below where the public officials are. But you could tell during the speech that there were sort of three emotional high points. One where he made reference to people who had worked for us throughout the ages, and he made reference to people who fought at Gettysburg and various battles. He also said those who suffered the lash of the whip, an obvious reference to slavery, and then ended it with this scene of saying that the soldiers are whispering to us, the dead soldiers are whispering to us in the Arlington Cemetery, that there is something higher than just the sum of our individual ambitions, that there's a call to service. And I think, you know, when he said those lines, there was sort of a, you know, you could see that people's hearts were clenching when he made that point. Then when he went on to make his point about standing up to terrorists, which got a big applause, huge applause out in the hall, and there's a delayed effect, so I could hear him saying his speech, and then it would be broadcast out on the monitors on the mall, and then there would be applause out there. That was actually one of the biggest applause lines. And then, of course, the scene at the end where he talked about the Revolutionary Army huddled in the winter and that they found a way out, his point obviously being that this country will now, too. And so while I haven't been able to have the opportunity to go out and talk, you can sort of see by, you know, the way people reacted, the feeling, and then the sound from the crowd out on the mall, which was then echoed back to us here up on the podium.
Have there been any protesters?
Not that I've seen. I haven't seen any protesters. I've seen a lot of delighted people. And, you know, I couldn't, from where I was sitting, see the face of former President Bush, but there were some pretty partisan things in that speech, particularly when he talked about being a conflict between fighting our wars and defending our values and at the same time defending our Constitution.
There were a couple of slaps. There was the one where he said that the business of government will see the light of day. And yes, that other one where he said that we will not give up our ideals for expedience's sake.
Yes, I mean, I thought that, you know, it must have been an uncomfortable moment for the Bushes. But I think that the fact that it was in this, you know, relatively simple, relatively brief inaugural address certainly underlines where he intends to take the government. And that was another line that got a huge applause out on the mall. And, you know, I'm looking now from the Capitol steps out to the Washington Monument, and there are people that are going past the Lincoln Memorial, passed down to the Lincoln Memorial, all the way down the length of the mall, and the parade route, which I can also see lined with flags and military bands, also looks completely full. So a huge crowd in Washington, D.C. on this cold afternoon, been sunny, getting a little cloudy, but who came to see this inaugural address today.
Andrea, thank you so much for talking with us. Maybe we'll be able to check in with you later. And we will
thank you.
Talking to other WNYC reporters in Washington, New York, and to other correspondents all over the world. And we're also inviting our listeners to join in. Our number here, 212-433-9692. Or you can leave a comment on our show page. Andrea, we'll see you soon. Todd Zwillick joins us now, just steps away from President Obama. Mrs. Zwillick is with Capital News Connection and a contributor to WNYC's The Takeaway. Hi, Todd.
Hi. How are you?
So can we stop calling him President-elect Obama now?
Officially, you must. He is Mr. President and nothing else.
Can you describe the scene at the Capitol building? I'm sure the mood is kind of celebratory, but the speech was rather dour, wasn't it?
It was rather brief. I have to tell you, I was struck by how much there was specific in the speech. I'm not sure that I have ever seen an inaugural speech that contained so many specifics. You know, traditionally, inaugural speeches have soaring rhetoric and broad strokes of generalities of the direction of the country and the spirit of the nation. And certainly, the speech contained those things, without a doubt, but an inaugural speech that contains specifics like building roads and bridges and building clean energy and electrical grids, all of those things were contained in the speech. And it was rather specific in some ways. There were some specific elements, Iraq and Afghanistan, mentioned by name. And the president's campaign promise to withdraw from Iraq mentioned by name in his inaugural speech. I thought that was more specific than usual, perhaps refreshing to some people who have specific policy desires that they want to see executed by the administration, but certainly out of the norm, at least as far as I remember it. Now, there were also the broad strokes, the notions of the direction of the nation, the spirit of the founding fathers, the spirit of people who came to this country either as immigrants or pioneers or slaves, and how their perseverance must become our perseverance as the nation confronts what he described as a dark winter or a dark hour and a time of struggle for the country. So all of those themes were there.
Well, he must have thought a lot about getting specific, and perhaps it's because he has inherited an economy in ruin, two wars, a healthcare crisis, historic deficits, national debt running well over $10 trillion, just to name a few of the problems. And perhaps he felt he had to level with the American public because we're going to have some tough times ahead.
Because the problems, you're right, the problems are undeniable. They're clear, at least the ones we know about are clear, and undoubtedly there are others lying just beyond the horizon that we've not yet realized, which is probably the thing that keeps many presidents up late at night. I'll give you a throwback to the last administration. The unknown knowns, or the knowns that are unknown, as I'm paraphrasing from Donald Rumsfeld. Uh-huh. We don't know what we don't know. But those things are real as well. It might have been a little strange had he given a speech of generalities and broad strokes about the grandeur of the nation when so many people are hurting and so many people are looking to this man and this administration, appropriately or inappropriately, to help lift them up.
We're going to play a little clip. Stay with us, okay?
I will.
But our time of standing pat, of protecting narrow interests and putting off unpleasant decisions, that time has surely passed. Starting today, we must pick ourselves up, dust ourselves off, and begin again the work of remaking America.
He used very direct, active language, kept it fairly simple. As you said, there wasn't the kind of soaring rhetoric we've associated with the great speeches of the past, but more specific than even FDR's speech. The words historic have been used all day to describe this inauguration, but aren't all inaugurations and presidencies historic? Do you think that the word historic is being used as a code word for first black president?
Maybe. You know, all inaugural speeches are historic, but some are more historic than others, right? Isn't that a Orwellian thing to say?
Yeah.
They are all historic. They're all recorded for history, but most are forgotten, aren't they? We've all seen the inaugural speeches of old being played and replayed on television this past week, and they only ever really show two or three. They show John F. Kennedy. They show Ronald Reagan. And, not much else. Maybe FDR, Fear and Fear Itself. Name me a line from another inaugural speech. It's a challenge. I can't name another one. So people might be looking for a speech with a tagline or a moment that carries through the way FDR or the way JFK or the way Ronald Reagan did. Did Barack Obama strike that tone? Only history tells that.
Well, let's listen to a caller, Alex from Brooklyn, with his thoughts on that very matter. Hi, Alex. Alex, are you there?
I'm here, yeah.
Go ahead.
I guess I was just calling. You know, I listened to the speech on your show. I did not get to see it, but I was calling to sort of register a little disappointment with it, actually.
Why were you disappointed?
I felt that, I thought Obama did a good job kind of being inclusive of everybody, religion-wise, experience-wise, socioeconomically, but in that way, it felt a little too general. I sort of thought it was lacking kind of a singular direction, and it didn't sound too emotional, actually, over the radio. I was much more impressed with the speech he gave on election night, personally.
What do you think about that, Todd? You think other people will be disappointed?
Well, it's impossible to say. Everybody looks to these speeches for something different. The president appeared to be a little bit emotional as he was coming out, the new president. What emotional tone he struck is probably in the eye or in the ear of the beholder. I don't think the president necessarily was going for the same tone that he may have in some of his more emotional speeches, like the caller from Brooklyn says, on election night. May have been a more personal note for him. In this case, maybe trying to sound more of a national note or a note for the whole country. I'm speculating, of course. We cannot get inside his mind or inside his true intentions for this speech, but maybe that's a reason for the result.
Todd, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's been my pleasure.
Is with Capital News Connection and a contributor to WNYC's The Takeaway. And now to report on what things are like at the mall in Washington, D.C., we go to WNYC reporter Siddharth Mitter. Hi, Siddharth.
Hi, Leonard. How are you?
I'm okay. Can you describe the scene where you are?
The scene on the National Mall. I am over by 14th Street, about a mile back from the Capitol. We were at about the fifth of the Jumbotrons. And the scene right now is best described as extremely noisy. The speakers and the sound system for this whole event were so high and so loud, and nobody had any trouble hearing. And now I don't even know what they're blaring at us. But there's a huge amount of noise, and the mall is emptying. People are leaving at a brisk pace, and flooding towards the south because the north is the parade route, which is already full to capacity, and that whole way out is shut. So people are leaving and streaming away from this incredible noise that you hear behind me.
Well, people are dispersing, you say, and the mood of the crowd generally positive?
The mood of the crowd was terrific. It was really, at least back here, amongst the common people, the mood was reverent, attentive. I had been wondering how people would respond when former President Bush and former Vice President Cheney were introduced, and there was a little bit of booing, a little wave of booing that came around, but it subsided quickly, and generally the mood of the crowd was very positive. There were rounds of applause, and during particularly President Obama's speech, but also during both invocations, Pastor Warren's invocation and Reverend Lowry's benediction, there was a lot of amens and yeses and choruses of approval coming from this crowd, from this probably about 50% in this area back here, African-American crowd.
Well, we have a caller from Brooklyn who has spoken to some people who are in the crowd, and she has something interesting to report. Hi, Diana.
Hello.
Yes, Diana. What have you heard?
My husband and 13-year-old son were at the inauguration, and my son called just when it was over, and I could hear shouting, and I asked him what that was, and he said it was a preacher or somebody shouting homophobic slogans, and that there was a sort of small demonstration gathered around him. My son, having been raised to view gay rights as a human rights issue, was very upset about this, and I am similarly upset that the invocation by Gene Robinson was apparently cut by HBO, and that the invocation today is by somebody who is an opponent of gay rights, and I wish that in all this talk about breaking barriers and establishing rights, gay rights could have been included.
Okay, well, let's go back to Siddhartha. Did you hear any of that, Siddhartha?
Not in this area, but let's be clear here. This was a gargantuan crowd. I mean, stretching on and on and on. Millions of people, clearly, as far as I could see, both towards the Capitol and back behind me, towards the Washington Monument. So any number of things, you know, there could be different ecosystems of belief and reaction in all different parts of the National Mall.
Well, adding to this conversation, we're going to go to Michael from Salt Lake City. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Leonard. How are you doing?
I'm okay. You were also thinking about the religious aspect of this whole matter?
Yes, I heard a prior caller mention that President Obama, so good to say that, was being inclusive to people of all faiths, and he used the word non-believers, which I think it's the first usage I'm aware of in a positive, inclusive fashion of atheists as part of the community of America.
Were you surprised by all the invocations of Jesus in Rick Warren's speech?
You know what? That's a good question. And I should say that one reason I'm in Salt Lake, even though normally I love to live in New York, is that I was raised Mormon. I thought that it was pretty well handled by him. And I thought that he invoked Jesus in a more or less personal way, and then also moved on beyond that to both give his personal expression of faith and accept his role as trying to be inclusive to other people.
Thanks for calling us. Siddhartha, the crowd is dispersing. Do you know where they're going?
The crowd is dispersing. Well, they're not going to the parade because people had to really choose whether they were going to be on the mall or at the parade because of the timing and so on. But I think a lot of people are going to be actually headed back quickly. A lot of New Yorkers that I talked to yesterday were making plans to leave Washington this afternoon or early tomorrow morning. There were buses coming in on 24-hour trips and so on. And I think a lot of people are going to get warm. But Leonard, if I can just say one thing to the conversation you were having with Todd Zwillick a minute ago about historic and what makes it historic. An impression that I got just watching the ceremonial before President Obama came out, and all the pomp and the members of Congress and the Supreme Court and all of this ritual that we have, is he said during his campaign any number of times that he used words like improbable and unlikely to describe his own candidacy. And I think that over time those lost their power because we were so used to seeing him as a candidate and as a prospective winner. But when you see the weight of these institutions, and when you stand out here on the National Mall and you see the monumental character of all of this, both the physical monumental character and the monumentality of the institutions that are housed here, it really was a very, very improbable thing. And I think that some aspect of that is being felt by everybody that's out here on this mall, whether they are African American or white or wherever they come from. Everybody is feeling some degree of this, I think.
Siddhartha, thank you so much for talking with us. Siddhartha at the Washington Mall.